Hello. It is Bowerly on News Radio 930 WBEN. Arthur Pressman, traffic attorney. Time is 8 minutes after three. So Wegmans, at least in New York City, is gathering biometric data, or data if you prefer. What is it? And what in the world would they do with it? And why are they doing it? My goodness, you'd think it was your cell phone, which does want biometric data sometimes. It does confer to see if you are a human. I know that. Joining us right now is IT expert Arun Vishwana on News Radio 930 WBEN. He was on the morning program with Susan and Brian today. Arun, thanks very much. Appreciate your time.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for calling.
First of all, what is biometric, or should I say, what are biometric data?
Well, biometrics are basically anything that's, you know, identifiable and unique to individuals for the most part, right? So that's your fingerprint, it's your DNA, it could be your voice, it could be an iris scan, it could be a facial recognition. All of them come with their own kind of limitations, but when we talk of biometrics, it's anything on the individual that is uniquely identifiable as that person.
So isn't it true that many places, government institutions, doctor's offices, hospitals are already collecting biometric data?
Well, there are places where they are being collected for all the good reasons, and there are places that they're being collected where it shouldn't be collected, right? I mean, so this is one of those things where it's become easier to collect. So yeah, there are places that are collecting it. Law enforcement does it, which is good. Border Patrol does it. Hospitals do it. And there are places like grocery stores where you got to scratch your head and say, why are you doing this, right?
Well, they say that they're doing it because of theft, because of security of merchandise and people who are habitual problem causers.
Right. And it's a great reason to do it, but it's probably the most severe and dangerous way of doing it, if you really think about it, right?
How is that different from other data collection they do?
I'll tell you what, right? So let's take what we have right now, right? So we have cameras. Right? Most of these institutions have cameras within them. Now, the difference between a camera feed and a biometric feed that a camera pulls in and starts using AI is that the camera feed does it after the fact, right? So a crime happens, it tells you, ask the question, what happened? What these guys are doing right now with these newer systems, which are AI-driven, is we're starting to say, who is that? It's identity-driven. And we're trying to predict it. We're saying, what else did this person do before they came, you know, in their prehistory, wherever they came in? What are they likely to do? So this changes the entire equation. You go from being a customer to being watched.
But if you've been ripping the store off, if you've been ripping the store off blind, you're not really a good customer, are you?
That's right. And that's an argument a lot of people make, right? They're like, hey, you know, I have done nothing. These people have. But the question is, what is that data that they're really using to say this person ripped the store? Now, there are real people out there who have ripped the store off. But is that the only input that's going into this? They're pulling in data from police blotters or police databases. So is a DWI legitimate enough to say, hey, let's track this guy when he goes into the grocery aisle to buy beer?
Well, is there any evidence? Do you have any information that Wegmans, for example, is in fact importing data from other sources? And would such data even be available? Would police departments share that data with Wegmans?
Right. So from what we know so far, there seems to be data that they're coming in from known sources. So we don't know. It's very opaque in that. We really don't know what data they're pulling in. And even if it's just store level data, right? Let's say it's across a bunch of stores, only their own data. Even that data is actually not really something that's very reliable, right? So what if they, you know, just checked you and it was a false positive? Remember, these systems have a lot of false positives built into them. Does that mean now you're in the black box or the black list, rather, until and when do you clear out of it? And again, there are lots of other questions that come with this, right? So we say, hey, you know, I haven't done anything wrong, but what if I was a suspect by mistake? And a lot of these systems tend to, you know, go after marginalized people, for instance, go after people of color. They seem to have more errors built into it. It's not that the system is wrong. It's just that there are more errors we have seen with these kind of systems when it comes to certain people, women, certain groups out there, racial groups out there. We've seen the data in lab conditions. So you put this in an open environment like Wegmans with lights and, you know, people wearing scarves and hats and stuff, error rates go up. So now you're in the system. How do you get out of that system? So there's a lot of these questions. It's not that the technology is bad. It's like the question we got to ask is, what's being done with it? How? What are the inputs into it, and what are the consequences out of it? And how do I get out of it once I'm in that black list of sorts?
How many false positives are you aware of, for example, in a healthcare setting, in a hospital or a doctor's office, where it basically says that somebody is using health insurance that isn't theirs or some other serious offense? How common is that?
So we have data right now. So the ACLU did some work. This is 2018. So remember, a lot of these studies have to be controlled experiments, right? So they're not happening in a hospital setting in an open environment. So in lab settings, the ACLU did a paper, and they looked at members of Congress, and they ran them through Amazon's facial recognition system. And almost 28 of the congressmen were seen as being shown as being having prior criminal histories in the system, which was all false flags.
You find that hard to believe? I don't find that hard to believe at all, actually.
I don't find and you can go further down that chain of thinking there, right? So once you start seeing that kind of data come out of a limited group of people who we know for the most part, right? Imagine what happens in the real world.
Well, I'm not very familiar with that study. I'm not sure what I don't know what guardrails were built into it. I don't know what the sample size was, except 535. I don't know.
Right.
I mean, you're giving me an example of something with which I'm not really familiar, and I don't know the methodology, etc.
Right,
and I don't know if applying an ACLU study, which is likely to be biased to a general population, is really fair.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree with anything you're saying. But look at it this way, Tom. There have been, a lot of these things we find out after the fact, right? Remember, I think a couple of years ago, Rite Aid was using a very similar facial recognition methodology. And they were going after people, and a lot of people ended up having to sue them. Because we find out years later the number of people who were just being searched, harassed, thrown out of the store, and they got sued by the FTC. So this is not like a biased piece. That's a real-world consequence. So the point here is the technology is not a problem. It's how you implement it that becomes a problem, right? It's not that the technology is biased. It's that there is biases, and there are ways to overcome them. And part of what we need to do is be more transparent about it. So we're not saying, hey, let's not have the technology, and let's not have there are many such instances out there, by the way. I don't know if you know about this, the Madison Square Garden incident, right, where they were using facial recognition to stop lawyers who had, lawsuits against MSG from coming in. Now, so there is this scope creep that you need to be really worried about once these technologies come in. So I am all for technology being implemented, but I'm also for technology being implemented in a transparent way so we know what is going in. Let's not keep it opaque. That's the argument here.
Well, is there anybody who would object to keeping lawyers out of some place? I mean, I'm sorry. Joining us right now, IT expert Arun Viswana on News Radio 930 WBEN. We're with you. It is 16 minutes after 3. If you're just joining us, Wegmans in New York City, anyway, is using facial recognition software, biometric data to be specific, which is a pretty widely encompassing terms. And they say it is to deter theft. It is to keep people who have not behaved well with others in the past out. And Arun is telling us, wait a minute, there are some flaws with this software. So you might actually be put in a situation where you are labeled as a troublemaker or a potential thief, even though you're not. And this is especially common with females. It's especially common with people of color. So how often, I'm thinking of other places where facial recognition software, or I should say biometric software, are used. And one of those places would be at an airport. You give the person your passport, and then they take a picture of you. Do we know of anybody who's been pulled aside for not being allowed on a flight because the biometric software screwed up? I mean, other than Cat Stevens, maybe?
Well, there is data out there. We know that the error rate is somewhere around 0.1 to 0.5%, depending on the data, depending on the program that's being used. But remember, those use cases are where we as citizens openly cede some of our authority away. Borders are a great example, right? If there's a false positive and we are checked a second time, we're all for it. But your social contract when it comes to shopping is very different, right? You don't go to shop to be surveilled or for your identity to be compromised by a private organization.
Well, on the other hand,
it's a different use case, right?
On the other hand, although there are exceptions to this, you don't have an expectation of privacy in public. I mean, obviously, a changing room, a bathroom, a hotel room, doctor's offices, those are exceptions. But typically, you have no expectation of privacy in a public place.
That's absolutely right. You don't. And you know, and the problem here is that today the technology is so easily available at the consumer level that I could put cameras around my house for less than a few hundred bucks and say, well, you know, it's outside my house, pointing outside and collect data, right? It's out in the public. Now, the problem with a lot of these are consequences, the so what, right? Person doing it on their phone, doing it at home, you're not taking that person and following them in the parking lot. You're not checking their bags after the fact. You're not flagging them. And what happens if someone's shopping with their kid? Does the child also automatically become part of the suspect list? How long are you on that list? And then the last thing, and this is something most people never talk about. You know, Wegmans has had a breach in 2021. And that was a breach of passwords and logins. Imagine a breach of biometrics, right? You can't change it. You know, I don't know about any of us, but Arun Viswanath can't change his biometric fingerprint.
You could change your name and make it a little easier for those of us who don't speak.
There's a couple of guys with my name out there.
Says the guy whose name nobody can possibly pronounce as well.
I know, but there are a couple of guys out there with my name, so it's not unique anymore, right?
No, hey, look, man, I can relate because people butcher my name right and left, and I kind of laugh about it. We are talking with Arun Viswanath, IT expert on News Radio 930 WBEN. So let me ask you a stupid so what question. Okay, so let's say Wegmans has a breach of my biometric. What would some bad actor do with my biometrics? I feed it into my cell phone every day.
You do, but your cell phone is protected by you, and it's within a very secure enclave. That can go out to third parties. That's being used to come up with a risk profile. Basically, it's coming up with what is called as a suspicion index. It's saying, hey, here's the person who we should all be worried about within Wegmans. If that suspicion profile goes with it, you know, whatever. You guys, we walk out, that could follow you. It could be used by TSA next. Where does it go from there? We don't know. It's very opaque. We don't know how to deal with this breach. With passwords and logins and first names and last names, we can change them to some extent, right? I mean, they'll give you credit protection. What's the protection for this? And don't forget that all your devices over time, if they really want to, the bad guys out there, they can use those biometrics to compromise them. Right? I mean, if they really wanted to. So there's a whole slew of public consequences here, right? Severe consequences. It's not coming back from this. And I don't know about you, but I don't trust a company that's been breached quite recently to say, hey, you know what? Here you go. Take it.
But I'm just thinking of what a bad actor would do with my biometrics. It would be so much easier to steal my credit card.
That's right. But biometrics are increasingly what we use to open devices. Biometrics are increasingly what we're using in border security and in planes and everywhere. So it's getting more commonly used in places that are a little bit more secure. So over time,
let me just interrupt, Arun, and ask you this.
Yeah.
If biometrics are so flawed, and if biometrics are being used more and more on such heavily trafficked points of transportation, I mean, you mentioned Congress before, 535 members. Well, there are hundreds of thousands of people who travel each and every day. Why have we not heard about people being corralled by the dozen or by the hundred because of faulty biometric data?
Well, we have heard about it, right?
On a daily basis, though. I mean, statistically, if it's 0.05%, there should be a lot of people every day who are calling into the show saying, I can't believe I got pulled in for a body cavity search.
Right. And part of it is that, you know, when it's happening within law enforcement, when it's happening in government, we'll never hear about it. Right. Part of it.
They'd call the show.
Your show, what I'm talking about is when this happens in the borders, when this happens in airline security, we seldom hear about it unless there is a huge, you know, New York Times piece coming out about it. But when it's happening in stores, we have heard about it. The Rite Aid example is a very prevalent example of this. The Madison Square Garden example is a very common example of this. There have been, you know, studies coming out of California talking about, you know, the law enforcement system using these systems and being flawed, going after people repeatedly in certain minority communities. There are lots of data that is out there. It just hasn't been something we've been focusing on in Western New York. We have not heard about it, but it's out there. And there's quite a lot. You could just look online and you'll find them.
Well, I'm a member of a minority community, the Ancient and Honorable Fraternity of Morons. Actually, it might not be a minority community. Actually, we might be in the majority. But why, given the advancing nature of technology, why would minorities or people of color, why would the technology be so inept or incompetent, if you will, or ineffective with a group of individuals?
I don't think it's inept. It's just that our training data sets are still being developed, right? Just by the nature of how these things are trained, these programs are trained, we need enough variation for every community for it to be accurate. And by the just nature of law of large numbers, right? Dominant, you know, common features, common communities have common features that are easier to represent in your models. Unique features are harder to represent in your models. Features just change quite a bit. Women tend to change, you know, hair color more than men do, for instance. Or styles more than men do. Or, you know, these things make a difference, right? And so your data set has to constantly be corrected for it. And that's one of the primary reasons why these things happen. So it's going to take a little bit more time to get these models. And I don't think they'll ever be at 100%. You're always going to be needing what I like to call the human in the middle, the human in the loop. You need to have someone in the system who's adjudicating what's right or wrong. The problem that we're facing as we go into this is we're getting to a point where the technology makes a risk assessment and says, go look for this person, and then the individual just follows. What we want to do is move away from that into a system where we're someone looking at this data and adjudicating whether that data is actually accurate or not. In an obtuse form sort of way, we experienced that in the city of Buffalo. I don't know if you remember, like, what is it, 2 or 3 years ago when we had cameras in school zones.
These
were automated cameras. You remember that? They were just picking up numbers and just sending people a ticket. There were hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of tickets that were issued, right? If you went 16 miles an hour, like if the posted limit was 15 and you went 16, they sent you a ticket. There was a huge blowback about it. And then eventually, I mean, these systems, once they get used to the money, you know, it's not going to go away. It just came back as a newer system. Now it's in school buses in that stop sign arm of theirs.
Yeah, well, those companies get a percentage. Those companies get a percentage. They're not doing it out of the goodness of their hearts. Arun, let's talk about the situation with masks. People who wear masks well past the pandemic. A long time ago, you weren't allowed to wear a mask in public. Now you wear a mask in public and nobody cares. Can we talk about how that would impact the collection of biometric data?
It does, right? Because now you got a partial face print, right? Remember how those data sets work, right? So basically what it's doing is it's taking a person's face and converting it to a numerical face map, right? We call that a face print. So if you have elements of it missing, the system's either going to guess, which means it's going to make more errors, or it's going to ignore it. So, you know, what do we do in a public policy point of view, right? Do we tell people you can't wear a mask? Or do we just start going and checking people who have masks on, just following them within the store? I mean, these are important questions. And finally, you know, we're talking about it. You know, in a obtuse sort of way, you know, this entire Wegmans incident is actually telling us, hey, this is something we got to pay attention to, just like the school bus incident we were talking about earlier did.
You mentioned something earlier about AI and AI being used in combination with the biometric data. What are your concerns as an IT professional about AI, not just in conjunction with biometric data at the consumer or security level, but AI in general?
Well, the biggest concern when it comes to these kind of things, especially within this spectrum, right, is that as we start using AI, now here's the thing with AI, right? If you've used ChatGPT or any of these device, you know, product services out there, it very confidently gives you responses. And over time, and it's right a lot more than not. And over time, what people do is they basically cede control to it. You just take its data and say, hey, you know, AI told me to do this. That's a big problem. And we're seeing this problem now play out. I mean, this recently happened with Air Canada, where essentially they said, well, the AI program made a mistake. So it's their fault, where a customer basically, you know, it gave the person wrong information and made them buy a ticket and, you know, charge them for it. And when the person said, well, that wasn't part of your policy, well, they said they blamed the AI program for it. So this is a problem, right, over time. And these are the kind of scope creeps and escalations that we need to be worried about. You know, what is, you know, coming back to Wegmans, you know, the system says, hey, look for that guy, Tom Bowerly, out there. And people start following you. When, who's responsible for it, right? And so this accountability issue is pretty important. Who's accountable for this? Is the technology making the decision? No, there's a person in it. And when does that person come in that loop? That becomes very important.
That's very interesting. I know you've got another engagement to which you must attend. Are you a private consultant? Is this what you do with private people? Are you a corporate guy?
I am a private consultant, and I do this for Fortune 500 companies, Fortune 100 companies. So, yes.
Wow. So I guess you kind of know your stuff. Is there a way that people, do you want people to be able to get in touch with you, or if they
Absolutely.
Already?
Yeah.
How do people get in touch with you?
Well, it's not an easy name to remember, but it's a first name, last name that you can't forget once you know it. You just said it. It's Arun Vishwanath. Look me up. It's arunvishwanath.us. And, you know, I'm all over the rest of New York. I'm, you know, in the media quite a bit, nationally, internationally, you know, so easy to find. Just do a search.
Yeah, we've got to do a show on AI at some point in the not-too-distant future. Arun, thank you so much, man. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Tom. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, I absolutely did. Arun Vishwanath on News Radio 930 WBEN.